Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson. I'm a writer, reporter, editor for ArizonaSports.com. I'm joined by the same person who holds those titles as I. It is Kevin Zimmerman. Kevin, how are you doing today?
Getting through the week, man. Dealing with things.
Yeah, it's been a really long week of ArizonaSports.com content for good reasons. They hired a very handsome Ryan Gosling-looking head coach. The Arizona Cardinals did, that is. They just hired their defensive coordinator about an hour ago from when we were recording this. And the Suns keep on doing the Suns stuff. In the meantime, they just keep chugging along.
Dude, we're halfway through the season. I know we've hit on some draft things because you can't keep you away from that mostly. And we will continue to touch on those things, but they're holding our attention. Like, there's promising things, as depressing as it all got. I think you called it the lowest point since we've started this podcast at some point in this season. We're back to enjoying watching basketball, I'll say. It's losing basketball many times, but I caught a win. Wow. I went to the game the other night and...
Yeah, so since we last podcasted, they had the Clippers loss, which was just more of the same crap that we were talking about last episode. They barely lost to the Hornets. One team had Kemba Walker, the other one did not. Could that change? Whoa. Off-season tease. Right there, I did it. Kings win is what you saw, 115-111. That was pretty great to see because...
Defense.
Defense, and also they finally... did one of those. So they've been doing these second half comebacks when they get blown out in the first half, and they've mainly resulted in about nothing. They got pretty close in one of those games. I want to say it was the Denver game is where they kind of got close, but other than that, it wasn't really amounting to much. And then they finally turned it into a win. That was a pretty rough loss for the Kings, I gotta say. I think when we were looking earlier in the season when the Suns had four or five wins, it was like, this is like that win, this is like this win. And there are a couple wins here and there where I can say like the other team just was dreadful. Remember the Memphis win really early in the season when Mike Conley and Marc Gasol made like two shots combined?
That was weird.
And then Dallas was just horrendous in the opener. And I think it was one of those as well where it was more of a benefiting from the other team. But with that being said, you have to play to a certain level to benefit from the other team playing at that level. And that's where I believe the Suns were on that game. And then, of course, the game that will be forgotten quickly for those who were in my mentions all during the draft last year.
It's fine.
Game in Dallas, 104-94 loss. DeAndre Ayton had a really rough go of it. Luka Doncic did not, on the other hand. Just one game, but there was a lot there from both players' standpoints, just as where they are in their development. What was the main thing that stood out for you from these four games? Because they were mainly the last three, I guess, because the fourth one was just the Clippers game was just kind of
Maybe it's just because I saw it, but just the response during the Kings game where, look, he's not going to throw guys under the bus in front of us. He's learned that. But he is going to pull DeAndre Ayton when he's playing poorly for Rashawn Holmes. He even will quickly put him back in, but you see that he's trying to get these guys' attention, and he has at least enough dudes when we talk about just guys who are going to fight on this roster now, where he can pull guys and he can be like, you're not playing hard on defense or whatever, you're making dumb mistakes on offense, I'm going to pull you. And that lineup in that third quarter was all guys who are going to fight for you most of the time, mistakes or not. Kelly Oubre played I think that was a career high, 26 points. D'Anthony Melton, I think, had one of his best performances coming off a rough game against Kemba, which wasn't all his fault at all, I don't think. Well, I shouldn't say at all, but to a large degree was not on him. Josh Jackson has been, we'll talk about this in a second, a nuisance on defense, playing with a lot of energy, making good decisions on offense, even off of turnovers that he creates. And then Rashawn Holmes like my friend was at the game, texted me, he's the best player on the court right now. He's their best player. And I was like, yeah, I can't disagree with that. Like, when you have that much impact on a game and he's doing so many things that you don't think of Rashawn Holmes, like when we talked about him at the beginning of the season, it was, he's an energy big. Sometimes he'll be in the right spots. He's athletic, great rim roller, but he's not, he looks like a backline, like very good player right now.
We're seeing a player come into his own. Like it never happened in Philly.
Yeah. And he has more to him offensively. Like, he had 5 assists because he's just making the right plays, but also just, he's not limited to dunking. He has that floater, and he has this weird 2 very long Euro steps that it'll take off one bounce and kind of snake around guys, which you don't see many when you call rim rollers. You don't see guys like that do that.
Yeah.
So he's definitely, I think, someone you got to give credit to him because he's most improved on this team. He's in that conversation.
One of the traps that we fall into a lot with players surrounding the Suns, and specifically in the end of the roster, is looking at guys like your boy, Daniel House Jr., just thriving on the Rockets right now. How about that?
Trying to get him a contract.
Derek Jones Jr. making impact plays on TNT last night for Miami. Looks like he's going to be a good part of their rotation for a while. We see those players and we say, well, they could never really like succeed here in Phoenix. And there was just never a system for them to succeed around as role players. To be fair, it goes the other way sometimes, where Rashawn Holmes is in Philly. It's just not the best situation. Even if it's a really good team, he just can't really figure out. His coach is playing him at the 4 for some reason. He's kind of all over the place, can't play over Amir Johnson, and he just needs another place to really show what he can do. And I think at the same time, he was kind of showing what he could do earlier in the season, and now he's starting to really come into his own. His last 5 games, I think this is really just going under the radar, how well he's been playing as of late. I think he's arguably been this team's best player in January so far. It's only been 5 games, but in those 5 games, the first game against Philly, he had 13-4-2-1. Next game, 16-4-2-3-3. Then he had an off night, 6-3-1-0-1. But then 12-4-2-3-2. And then 16-6-5-1-2 against Dallas. So he's filling up the box score right now with steals and blocks and even getting a couple assists in here and there. I think that's been a part of his game that we've seen come together more lately. Just looking at his game log as well, you can see a lot of games earlier in the season where he had 1 or 0 assists, but now he's starting to bump that up to 1 or 2, and then he has 5 assists against Dallas. I think he has just been one of the team's best players this season. When you're looking at the entire roster, I think Booker and Ayton and Warren have been the big 3 by a pretty significant margin, but that 4th best player on the team, I think it's been Rashawn Holmes.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I saw Kings reporters being like, they're just watching Ayton blow coverages, and then Rashawn comes in and people were just blown away by how well he's playing from the outside. So props there to Rashawn. And one thing about them too is, what's good for Igor is he can pull Ayton because they have a really good relationship. Like, I forgot what game that was where they won at the end, probably their last one before the Kings game, where they were just hugging each other. Like, they have a really good relationship between them and they root for each other. And that's kind of good to see that culture is being built, because look, if you look back at even the last, like, 2 years
in Orlando, that was the last one.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, if you look at the team, the Suns, a few years ago, you didn't get that sense of the locker room being where guys are rooting for each other, guys are talking to each other so much in the locker room. It was just a bunch of very different personalities from however much I spent around them. And now you can kind of just see that these guys are rooting for each other and are playing together. And that's important. They're not winning games still, but you can see cohesion, I think.
I'm glad you said that, because I asked the question, then as soon as I said it, I was like, oh, that's really stupid. I asked Evan Booker specifically that. I was just like, I feel like you guys are vibing a lot more this season compared to the last couple of seasons. And of course, he's not going to throw shade at the last couple of teams and say like, yeah, Marquise Chris was the worst, or Marcus Morris or Markieff Morris was the worst or whatever. He's not going to say that. So he quickly made it like that, but then he like ended it by saying like, yeah, we get along really well together. And Josh said that about a month and a half ago. I think it was on
It was
that.
More off the court, right? They yeah. got along, yeah.
Yeah, and a month and a half ago, when they were, I believe, on an 8-9-game losing streak, something like that, Josh just said, like, yeah, the team chemistry around here is fine. Like, that's not the issue. Like, we all really like hanging out with each other and playing together. We just need to figure out some things on the court. And that's been great to see, obviously, because when you're building up the foundation, which we've just been staring at a blank canvas for like 3 years.
We've just been hammering at the foundation.
Yeah. There isn't even a foundation. There isn't even a foundation going up yet. But we're waiting for it to start to go up. And how it starts to go up is what we're seeing right now, which is the cohesion. And why I wanted to mention Rashawn Holmes before we get to Josh Jackson, who we wanted to talk about, is because I think those two players figure prominently into what the team does this upcoming offseason. Holmes is an unrestricted free agent. And now at the root of this, you're looking at this and saying, okay, here's a backup energy big. How much do the Suns really need to keep him? With that being said, I think he is absolutely perfect for what they do on both sides of the court. I tweeted that when he got traded, I was like, in theory, he's the same kind of player as Ayton as a rookie, at least. He's a rim runner who's extremely athletic and can really run the floor and uses that defensively as well to make plays as a shot blocker. Not sure if he's a good defender, not sure if he can do anything else besides rim run, and we found out this year that, like, dude can take two dribbles and make a move to the basket, too. I really think they need to keep him. I think it goes far beyond he's a great teammate to have and the fans love him here. I think just on the court, how much you need him, because if you just lock him down with Ayton and give him a 3-4 year deal, whatever it is, you lock him and Ayton together for the next 3 to 4 years. You had the quote in your recap that said Rashawn, there's like a relationship there with Rashawn and DeAndre that's already there. I think DeAndre said, or Rashawn said, like, that's my little brother.
Yeah,
pretty much. Players say that a lot, but I generally sense that between them, and you mentioned it earlier with them switching off minutes and everything. It hasn't really been an issue with them getting either of them getting pulled out of games and being upset. I think they really need to keep him, because you lock down that position, you look at the wings, and then you look at Booker, you've got a lot of this done now in terms of team building, and I think getting Rashawn is part of that. Now, the difficulty is, how much money is he going to command? Centers are centers, so we can't expect them to get paid that much. And I don't think he's a starting caliber center. He might be.
He keeps doing this, man.
But if he keeps playing like this the rest of the season, he could be. But I think you have to pay him to a certain extent, even if it's in the...
The concern... Like, he's
even if it's in the $8-10 million range, I would...
I think he could push to 15, because, like,
he really could. So many teams are gonna have money.
Yeah, and the problem is he's actually in a good spot for them, because you could sign him, assuming you don't want to go hard after big max free agents this summer, and just say, hey, we're gonna play you two guys together. When Ayton gets too good and you're not getting enough minutes, we'll try to trade you. I don't know if that's how a good business should be run in the NBA.
Heavy grain of salt, we say that.
Yeah.
Because of who runs the team at the moment.
I don't know who runs the team. That was kind of serious.
But it's like half serious and half kidding and taking shots. But at the same time,
I can't tell.
We have no idea because, oh, yeah, this team still doesn't have a general manager yet.
Yeah.
They have two co-interim general managers. It's January.
It's January, everyone. But yeah, it's
just here to remind you every 2 episodes that this is still a thing, by the way.
Real quick. So if they hire you as GM because they haven't hired anyone yet,
I'm here. I accept.
And you could only pay one of him or Kelly Oubre, who do you pay? Same amount of money, let's say 12 mil a year for 3 years. I'm just kind of shooting.
Oh, my brain hurts.
Yeah, see, I don't know.
Okay, so
Oubre, theoretically, you can use more.
The backdoor thing here that a couple of people have mentioned that we have to keep an eye on is D'Anthony Melton. Because D'Anthony Melton should have gotten the 4-year Eliakobo deal, but they couldn't do it because they had someone named Tyson Chandler still on their roster. There was some sort of I don't know if it was a money thing or it was like a rule thing specifically, but specifically them choosing to not buy out Tyson Chandler and instead sign Melton to a 2-year deal prevented them from signing him to a 4-year deal. So I'm just looking at the way that, that Melton's playing as a rookie and just how he projects already as like a defensive pest backup point guard, let alone like how he looks at the end of his second year when he hits restricted free agency. Where does he factor into this in terms of money? Like, if I pay both Oubre and Holmes, that's not the question you're asking, but if I pay both Oubre and Holmes, can I even pay D'Anthony Melton?
Probably.
I think I can, but if I had to pay one...
Depends what you're trying to do with the other money that you have, which I can't get in their heads right now.
I need to answer... I need that's a question I just need to answer at the end of the season. That's a cop-out, but I need to see how Josh Jackson plays the rest of the year.
Okay.
Because if Josh keeps this up with the way he's been playing in the past couple of games, and it's another thing where he plays really well in the second half of the season, and again, he's been, like last year, it was the same thing we said at the end of the year with him. It's we'll get to him in a minute, but he's just been tossed around so much that it seems like he's finally comfortable in his own role and figuring out what's going on for the most part. To answer your question, though, I will still answer it. Thanks. I would pay Oubre. I think Oubre is the more valuable asset at this time. Definitely like a wing over a center,
need,
no question.
Yes, need is kind of what separates them.
And Oubre is a good basketball player at a vital position. I'm pretty sure Rashawn Holmes is a good player. I'm 95% sure, but at the end of the day, he's a backup center, and your number one overall pick is your starting center. So if Aiden's playing 32, 33 minutes a game, which he should be every night, this guy's playing 15, 16 minutes a night.
Yeah.
But that's not to detract what I just talked about 6 minutes ago. Like, I still think they really need to keep him. I tweeted out a couple days ago, I hope other teams are not watching the Suns like the national media, or else Rashawn Holmes is going to get paid a lot of money.
I think he might.
I've seen a lot of people. Like,
teams are a little smarter now, though. But
I've seen a couple of like tweets like, I don't know if he could play in the playoffs. And I'm like, you're not watching this.
Yeah.
Like, he could absolutely play in the playoffs. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, he'd be so... Put him in Robert Williams' role right now for Boston. Oh, my God. He would be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is something we'll talk about more in March, April, as we get towards draft stuff and offseason previews and stuff. But nearly half the teams in the league are going to have enough money for a max spot. And there aren't that many guys you want to sign to a max contract that are in the free agency classes here. So there are going to be a lot of teams that are talking to their ownership and saying, oh, we have all this cap space, it's great, and then it's going to be July 8th, and they're going to be staring at Rashawn Holmes and saying, oh, we have a need at center. This guy's kind of good. Here's $11 million a year.
Yeah.
That stuff happens. That's how Lou Alding and Timofey Mozgov happened.
They're still happening.
They're still happening. Oh, my gosh, they're still getting paid. That's right. Let's talk about Josh Jackson, because he figures into the conversation we were just having. I wrote a piece on ArizonaSports.com. If you go on my Twitter, it's pinned up there. Basically discussing how he went from the number 4 overall pick a year ago, like the 2017 NBA draft, to whatever he is right now, which we don't really know what he is at this point. What we can take from this season is that he has been an extremely inefficient scorer who turns the ball over at an astronomical rate. So he's just horrible on offense this year. That's how he's been in the first 39 games.
It's hard to tell if he's budged because he was so far down there as far as like total points detracted from stats.
Your favorite thing was the NBA math tweet where they have the... those are the... You've probably seen them on your timeline before if you're on Twitter. It's like a graph and it has picture. It has heads of players on it. And there was just this huge conglomerate of players in the middle, and it was like, here's our player value rankings, and then Josh Jackson was all alone on the left. Like, there was no one near him.
No.
So, according to their metric, he was the worst player in the league so far, and we were saying that at some points earlier in the season, that he was playing like one of the worst players in the league.
We've seen a few of those with Brandon Knight the other year, but...
With that being said, what we've seen from the team in December and what we saw in the Kings game that you alluded to is that this team is really figuring out its identity. He plays into that with the energy he brings off the bench defensively. And even if he is inefficient or even if he is turning the ball over, if those two things aren't at a 14 out of 10 like they've been this season, like we've seen especially in the past couple of games, and he can be efficient some nights or he can not turn over the ball so much some nights, he can be a really effective player still. He's not... a lost cause as a draft prospect at all. This is not what's happening at all. And the thing that's so fascinating about him now, and what you mentioned when I posted the piece, is that we have to talk about him and how he fits in their long-term picture now because Kelly Oubre exists.
Yeah. The thing that has stood out to me lately, I'll just talk about the offensive part. We can get into defense, but he's changed his shot. I think I haven't been around to talk to him or ask him about it, but he used to have like this very straight up and down, and his arms would swing out and his body would go up, and it wasn't really connected, his arm movements, shot motion, and his body. And now he has like this more forward, like his legs go forward, his arms will go forward. It's one fluid motion.
It's more of a 1-2 fluid kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like load fire type of thing.
It's all one. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all one thing. Basically there was a hitch somewhere in there.
His and he's feet, like, it's kind of like he's jumping forward instead of straight up and down. So it, and he actually loses arc, but it looks better. And
it seems like on his release, it's just more touch based. Like it seems less randomized. I think it just with the way the ball's coming out of his hands. That's your today's episode of Kellen Olsen Shot Doctor.
Yeah.
Because I don't know.
We need to talk to him about it to ask him if we're just making things up out of our heads. But
the hitch is definitely gone from the start of his rookie year. Like, that's 100% gone. And
it's going in, so.
Yeah, to no surprise, he has been probably working his tail off to get it fixed because that's the type of competitor and type of player overall that he is. But we were talking about the shot on offense, but what else have you seen there to be encouraged by this year?
On offense, just decision-making, shot selection. Like, he is going to take a step back if the clock's running down, and he'll do it confidently, which is fine. But I just see him attacking more and using, like I wrote about it earlier in the year, he has a floater that's actually good, but sometimes he'll do it at full speed, and he's starting to learn, okay, I can just do a jump stop and kind of float it up instead of still barreling into the cameraman behind the basket. And he's taking set jumpers, which he still needs to. Like, I never said don't take them. Don't take step backs off the dribble, maybe. But the threes are looking good now. So between that and his playmaking, it's more decisions, I think, that are, well, it's combined decisions and that shot that's going in.
There's so many young players on this team that so many of them do the, I'm in the air and I have nowhere to go with this, so I'm going to throw it right at a defender, because you should just honestly just throw the ball out of bounds.
Yeah.
Just don't give them a free transition opportunity. Just throw the ball into the ninth row to that Suns fan who's been asking you for an autograph all night and give him his experience he'll never forget, because that's better than throwing the ball directly to the other team's point guard who will create 2 or 3 points on the other end in 4 seconds.
Yeah.
The shot, as of January 2nd, Jackson was 6 of 33 on corner threes. Not great. With that being said, he's having a nice little run here. 6 of 14. This is in January, the first 5 games.
That's only corners?
That's only corners.
Interesting, yeah.
6 of 14 from the field against Philly. 4 of 6 against Clippers. 9 of 13 against Charlotte. 5 of 11 against Sacramento. And then 7 of 13 against Dallas. He's shooting 54% in those 5 games. So it's great to see him. That we haven't even seen that this year, like a run of 3 games in a row where he's had efficiency, let alone 5. So that's very good to see. And in those games, assists 4-0, 4-5-3, turnovers 2-2, 3-4-2. I think the turnovers are just going to come. You just have to deal with those. But steals and blocks are something that we highlighted about him at the, really the whole year last year. We were saying, where's that?
Yeah,
we were waiting for him to be more of an assist, block, steals guy. We're seeing more of that this year. Rebounding, he helps this team there. That's a little under the radar thing about this team. They've been a pretty bad rebounding team, and he helps there as well. 6-5, 6-4, Sixers rebounding totals in those 5 games as well. I think he needs to stay. I think he's what you need, but that's because defensively, which is, I guess, where we can take it now, because you kind of covered offense. Defense is pretty simple. He's pretty good at it, and he's getting much better at it. He has much better to go, I think is the way I should have phrased that, but instead of making grammar correct and all that.
This stretch has been about their fouling, and I think they're just going through one of those stretches where they're not getting calls. I know the officiating thing is young players don't get calls. They don't, unless you're Devin Booker. He's still young, but he's old by NBA age standards, and he's kind of a star. He knows how to draw fouls, but these other guys are picking up a lot of fouls because they just don't have enough experience to learn how to navigate that and how to draw fouls, how to put your arms under a guy's outstretched arm trying to block your shot and just draw it. That's something he can learn, but
Melton's sixth foul in the Dallas game was one where it was like you stripped the ball, you got it and just missed, like, okay, just stop there. And then he went again because he's a rookie and he got a foul. And it's like, maybe you didn't actually foul him, but the fact that you went in twice, it's just like that's little, like, third year in your league. You should never go in twice after you fail once.
If you get a deflection and they get the ball back and they waste a few seconds and got the rhythm, the offensive rhythm out of sync, that's a win. Take it and stay in front of him. And Igor kind of has mentioned that where he's been telling especially these wings like Kelly and Josh, don't take so many chances. And stay solid, stay in front of your guy, pick your spots to, if they put the ball out and expose it, you can obviously take a swipe at it. You want to steal it, but don't jump passes randomly. And I think if we use Melton as an example, like, of all the things he's good at, I'm so impressed. You can see on when he's off the ball, if someone drives off the ball and he's on the weak side, he is so good at knowing where they're going to try to kick out, and it's not to his guy, it's he has to go somewhere else, and it looks like, okay, well, he's leaving his man in the corner for a three, but he has a great sense of they're not looking at his man, they're going over here with the ball, and he jumps the passing lane to another guy. And it's very different from Eric Bledsoe used to just jump passing lanes. Well, Melton is, you can see where he's thinking about jumping passing lanes, and he's not getting out of position and finding himself caught like that. So he's a guy where it's like he takes risks, but they're not as big as of a risk of just guessing that a guy's up in the air and going to pass it somewhere. Like he has a good sense of where they're thinking and where they're going.
Melton's point guard skills are still coming along. I think he's getting better in that regard, but I think his defense, especially in the past like 10 games, you're reminding yourself, oh yeah, he didn't play last year.
Yeah.
He didn't play competitive basketball last year because college basketball is stupid. The NCAA sucks.
Yeah.
Anything to add on that, Kevin?
No. Like you can commit a felony and have a plea agreement, but the NCAA won't do anything about that.
If your second cousin took a hotel room at a basketball tournament when you were in high school, you can't play the ball, apparently. So Melton in that Sacramento game you were alluding to, 8 assists, 4 steals, and 2 blocks. Seems pretty crazy for a
late offensive rebound and putback from a point guard.
Yeah, I looked it up, and that's only been done by a rookie 20 times ever. 8 assists, 4 steals, and 2 blocks in a game. That's kind of a random basketball reference thing, but at the same time, that's the type of nights he can give you sometimes. By the way, Penny Hardaway did that 3 times in his rookie year. What? I miss Penny, man.
Yeah.
Oh, I miss watching Penny and Shaq. Anyway, to the point on Melton, I think he's important to be in this conversation because he belongs. He's not a wing, but he belongs in the talk with Oubre, Jackson, and Bridges.
Yeah.
Where do you think Jackson is redundant? So the question I asked at the end of the column was, you just need to decide right now, like, maybe even by February, are you in or are you out on him? Because his value could be going down. You might need to decide on this soon, especially like end of next offseason or end of the offseason, because you'll have signed Kelly Oubre or not. Where do you see him being redundant enough in this fit with the team where you consider moving him? And where do you say, like, we really need to keep him? And if we pay Oubre, we'll just figure it out.
So if I'm looking at him, I'll just answer this by comparing him to Oubre. Oubre, I think, is limited in what he's going to become. Like, I think he can still get a lot better offensively. I think he can become a better scorer, more efficient, and his shot is a lot better than I even thought it was coming in. But Josh is, again, showing he can grow into something a lot more than Oubre is right now, and that's mostly the playmaking stuff. Like, they have a lot of the same things, but his playmaking really changes how I think of him and his upside, because he legitimately sometimes looks like a point guard working off pick and rolls with the bigs. Like, is he where does he rank as far as their best pick and roll players? I know they don't really have any, hardly, but he's, what, two after Book? I don't know.
TJ might be getting up there now. TJ's been better this year.
Yeah.
But not at passing.
No.
Not at making passing reads, no, but in terms of making plays in there, I think Josh is the complete package, yeah. I think a lot of it, to me, is hedging on who is the other primary ball handler besides Booker, because if it's someone who is going to have the ball enough in their hands,
Uber is,
then it's okay, and you can keep all of them together. But I think if it's Booker and someone like Melton or some kind of... Booker's going to do nearly everything. This guy's going to help him every now and then. That's where I actually worry about keeping Jackson, because then you're relying on him to kind of secondary creation for a lot of your game, and I'm not so sure that's where you want him. But if you have two primary ball handlers on this team, even if it's something we talked about a couple months ago, like Bradley Beal and Devin Booker, for example, just off the top of my head, if it's those two, I don't really worry about Josh Jackson having to do too much on offense, and I think that's where you get the most out of him and where the value makes enough sense to keep him around. I think you can keep all four of them. I think you can keep Oubre, Bridges, Warren, and Jackson together. I think Warren's a really interesting one we should probably hit on before the trade deadline, just because I think there's a question of like how high his value is right now and how does he really fit long-term next to DeAndre Ayton, and with all the switchy wings you have right now, couldn't you use a more traditional four there that does a little bit more defensively instead, but at the same time, he's a really good stretch four and a really good shooter. It's a really interesting debate that I just had to myself for 10 seconds that we'll have on another episode, but I think they should keep him, and that's being probably biased because of the last, like, 2 weeks that he, or the last week and a half that he's shown.
It's interesting because even Kelly the other night when he scored 26, he said that he was just comfortable. He's finally starting to get comfortable in this system, and after changing teams and moving across the country and all that. Josh kind of has that argument. You've brought this up about him being shifted around and stuff. And my whole thing is, it's just when Book goes down, he looks the best. And
yeah.
To me, that's weird, and I don't know if it's concerning.
It's very weird.
But it's like, okay, but what can you do when Book's healthy? Because Book is going to command the ball so much. And right now, apparently Kevin O'Connor in his podcast said the Suns are interested in... He's heard the Suns are interested in Dennis Smith Jr., which we can have that conversation another time probably if it gets more serious, but that's
I don't want to talk about DSJ, man. Okay. I don't feel good about it. I don't feel good about it anyway.
Let's focus on Josh, yeah.
Let's focus on Josh. The biggest question with Josh, to me, is does he still think that he should be, and this is something Burns and Gamble hit on their show all the time with him, does he think he is the guy who should be taking 15 to 20 shots a game? If he thinks he is that guy, ship him out.
Yeah.
If he
that's
does,
an easy, simple way to put
very
it.
Very easy. If he thinks now and understands in this bench role that the best place for him is taking 8 to 12 shots a game, and then maybe some nights it's 6, some nights it's 14, whatever, based on circumstance. But your main responsibility on this team is driving their energy through defense, which I think he's trying to do at the same time while being 15 to 20 shots a guy, and it's like that's where the imbalance is and why you kind of play like that sometimes, is trying to do too much. If he can just see, like, this is what you need to be, because everyone watching knows... Your pal Fred, who has seen the Suns 3 times this year, Fred knows that Josh Jackson just needs to tone it back a little bit on the scoring and just focus on all the role player-y stuff. And if he focuses on that, and that's where he is. But I think the main thing is just, I worry about that in like 2 or 3 years, whatever. It's just like right now, does he still believe that he should be? Because he definitely thought about it. He thought in his rookie year, like it was clear with the way that he was playing. Does he think he's like 20 points per game, isolation scorer, big part of my game guy?
He's trying right now. That's where I'm regained promise, and we can do this. I'll talk about it in a sec because we're going to throw out some random awards because it's the midseason point, basically. He's trying, and that's where the playmaking thing is promising to me, because it's not just about him making plays. It's that he's willing to do it instead of just taking step-back jumpers, which he looked really happy and willing to do, and now he's kind of gone away from that. So I will say that's the promising part, into hoping that he is not a 15 to 20 shot guy. Anything else you want to...
Midseason awards. We're going to throw out some random ones. I'll start. Best free agent signing by the Phoenix Suns this year. There aren't many choices. but I'm going with Jamal Crawford. I think Jamal Crawford hurts the Suns sometimes more than he helps them. I will start with that little side note. But with that being said, there are some nights where he's just changing games for them. He is, they desperately need an injection of something on some nights, and he provides it. And that something is just scoring, and it's also making plays off the dribble. Something you talked about a ton where I was a little bit on the signing, and you were more of, they need dribble men. They need the men who can dribble.
The dribble men.
They need these guys. And he has been that guy for them. Yes, there are some nights where he's going to shoot 1 of 6 like he did in the loss to the Kings. But he also had 4 assists in that game. He also had 4 turnovers. He also had 4 fouls. So it's this balancing act with him that's been really the antithesis of his entire career as a heat check guy off the bench. But even going beyond that, if he was shooting 20% this year, it's very, very clear all these players not only listen to him, but they look up to him. Josh Jackson picked the number 11 because of Jamal Crawford. Devin Booker, if you are a scorer in this league or you want to be a scorer in the league, you look up to Jamal Crawford and idolize him in a certain manner. He is, like, for hoop heads, and that's people who play basketball for a living, they're all hoop heads. At least like 98% of them are. There's that weird like Evan Turner range where it's like, do you really enjoy this? Like, I'm not really sure. Are you just here because you're really good at this?
Paul, yeah. Myers-Leonard, I don't know.
Myers-Leonard. We're just naming the entire
all the Blazers.
Everyone except Damian Lillard. Yeah. CJ McCollum just wants to have his podcast.
Like, yeah.
Wow, just big.
He's working on his journalism career 3-4 years into his NBA career.
When you clicked on this podcast, did you expect us to roast the Trailblazers?
I didn't.
I didn't either.
Just happens.
Back to Jamal Crawford and hoop heads. It's very clear that he's having a positive impact on this team. I loved seeing Eric Moreland, who's not with the team anymore, come back from, we would be waiting post-game in the locker room, and that was, by then it was like 25, 30 minutes after the game, and he would come back sweating. He would come back in the locker room. That's because he was getting shots with Jamal Crawford in the practice gym, because he's not playing, and Jamal Crawford's probably like, anyone want to go get shots up? And Eric Moreland's like, well, I didn't play tonight, and I'm probably not going to play, so I better stay loose, sure. And that, I mean, that's Eric Moreland, of course, is what I'm saying, but he's doing that with Elia Kobo, he's doing it with all these other guys, and it's far beyond the narrative of just, he's getting shots up after practice. It's much, much more than that. And plus, I really enjoy talking to him. I find myself just asking him basketball questions. Like when the Sixers, after the Sixers shoot around, I was just asking him about like Jimmy Butler and the Big Three and how he thinks it's coming along and stuff. Because I'm just interested to hear what he has to say, because he's very nice to talk to. And beyond my obvious media bias right there, I think he's really helped them on the court, like I said.
My next award will be, which player is giving you the irrational hope? Irrational Hope Award.
Yeah.
I think I just talked about him, Josh Jackson, I think. I was really down on Josh Jackson at the beginning of the year. If you remember, summer league poor, preseason poor, beginning of the regular season very bad. Shooting not good, same as last year. Everything was the same as last year. The bad parts of last year. Now he's kind of flashing, and you would like to think, because like I can tell he cares and he's smart and he works hard. So he's giving me irrational hope.
My next award. Actually, do you have one? I want to look something up really quick.
I'm going to give DeAndre Ayton my best, most quotable man award because it's mostly after games. He's always just, I think it's like after you get home from work, your brain's still firing and you're just really into it. And he's always just like chattering away. And that's like the best DeAndre Ayton time where he's talking about, man. And it's a lot of times it comes across in our stories like, oh man, I just got my butt kicked by LaMarcus Aldridge who used these elbows. But he like goes into really good detail. Like after the other game the other night against Kemba, he was just like shocked at how small Kemba was, which I actually was because I haven't seen him live since UConn beat Arizona in the Elite Eight. And it was like, dude, that guy's a lot shorter than D'Anthony Melton. And DeAndre after the game was just like, man, like he's up in like at his shins. Like he just moves around so low to the ground and just hearing that kind of stuff so openly, I don't think I've experienced that from many NBA players, like without you asking about it. Like he just offers it.
two-time award winner, DeAndre Ayton. I'm going to come back right to him. I'm going to give him the award for showing glimpses in the season that are not making me want to swan dive off a bridge award. Because if you look at Luka Doncic in Dallas right now, yes, I'm going to talk about him. Close the podcast out. We're done here. If you don't want to listen to it, deal with it. He's averaging 19.8 points, 6.7 rebounds, and 4.9 assists a game right now as a rookie. The rookies who have done that, Sidney Wicks, who basketball heads might know, but not really many people will know. He was awesome in his first 4 years, 5 years in the league, was an all-star all four or five of his first years, and then just kind of dropped off the face of the planet. I'm sure there's some sort of explanation there. But the other names, Elgin Baylor, Larry Bird, Grant Hill, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Oscar Robertson, and Michael Jordan.
Were they good, though?
So that's kind of concerning when you pass on that guy at the number one overall pick and someone sitting in this chair right here wanted you to take the guy with the number one overall pick. But with that being said, I think that DeAndre Ayton has shown a lot of positive strides forward this year. Just seeing him even try to face up off the dribble recently against, I want to say, the Kings was something. He had that rip through that we talked about on Twitter against Charlotte.
Turnarounds.
Turnaround jumpers, even in the post. Those are starting to look way more comfortable for him. And then, of course, defensively, I think he has improved a lot as a rookie will, naturally. But I think there was some cause for concern that he would kind of stagnate a bit and just be this guy with a high floor, and who knows if he's going to improve. To take that point and turn it around back on me, if you look at DeAndre Ayton's line of 16-10-2 as rookies, who's ever done that before? It's a longer list. It's 23 guys, but names on that list include Sidney Wicks again, like Wilt Chamberlain, Larry Bird, Dikembe Mutombo, shouts, Larry Johnson, Blake Griffin, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Oscar Robertson, Tim Duncan, and so on. And then if you sort all those guys by true shooting percentage, DeAndre Ayton's at the top, 62.5. His efficiency is off the charts this year. It's crazy, and that is evidenced by it. So all those amazing, awesome players as a rookie, they were not as efficient as this, and he's at that level. So I've still not processed yet that Luka Doncic might own the NBA in 4 years, and the Suns potentially passed on that guy. But DeAndre Ayton is helping a lot with the way that he is playing, and that is maybe not something I expected from him in his rookie year, given that I was lower on him than some people, to say the least.
There was no way to screw that first pick up, I think. I think that's the good thing about this, because even if you go to Trae Young, Jaren Jackson, I think that draft class is going to be really good, even guys further down than that. My next award will be, hey, you were the point guard of the Phoenix Suns Award. Because at the beginning of the season, we didn't have that. Well, we kind of did. Sorry, Isaiah Kanan.
As Max on Suns Twitter calls him, pointless guard, which is really rude. Like,
who?
That's really rude.
Isaiah?
Yeah.
That's also rude to him, but
yeah,
I was going to talk about Melton.
Well, no. I was saying that's what he calls Isaiah Kanan, his pointless guard, which is really mean. But
that's pretty mean.
It's just mean. I'll just say that.
Yeah.
But
kind of funny, though.
You can laugh at it if you want to, but I just think it's mean.
I really enjoy watching DeAnthony Melton. He knows his flaws on offense. He has a lot of ways to improve, and I don't know if he can ever be a positive on offense. But right now, his defense is, like I said earlier in the pod, super impressive to me. I can't think of one play where he legitimately just screwed up and against Kemba in that game, for example, and just quit or got fooled and looked like a fool, like a rookie. Like, he needs to work over screens better. He's got to learn all the little things that Kemba does to get off of him and all these other guys, but I just see a really solid defender, and not only solid defender, but he knows when to pick his spots and how to really disrupt the game. And at this point, it's mostly from off the ball, but I think he can get a lot better on the ball because he's actually pretty big, pretty strong already. And I'm legitimately, there's a reason why he's the starting point guard right now, even though he doesn't really do a lot for you on offense.
Last award for me is going to TJ Warren. I think anytime you talk about the Suns this season, you have to talk about his improvement in three-point shooting. It's just happened so naturally that it sort of feels obvious, but it wasn't at all. And the thing about 43.3%
still
from
there,
three
huh?
on 4.4 attempts a game, we are 37 games in and he's still there, is he did it in the Dallas game. He had the ball with like 7 seconds left on the right wing, like 5 feet off from the three-point line. He took two dribbles forward and just shot it.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude is hitting off the dribble threes now? Like, the you can just look at the catch and shoots from the corner where there's guys in his face or whatever, like, off the dribble, this guy now? It's unbelievable. This might be, like, just, like, home bias or whatever, but Eddie Johnson was on the call, and I think Kevin Ray asked him, like, have you ever seen anything like this before where a guy has gone from horrible shooter? It wasn't a horrible shooter. They said a guy who just refused to take threes to becoming a sharpshooter. And he's like, no, I've never seen anything like this. And Eddie Johnson could hit a jump shot or two back in the day. So I'm sure that's something that he takes very seriously talking about.
He coached guys, like did individual. So I think he's worked with guys. And yeah, that's a strong statement from him.
And by the way, with that 3-point shooting, TJ still, I mean, it's going to help, of course, but he's shooting 49.4% from the field still. So again, he's this guy, 15 points a game at least. He's at 18.7 right now, shooting 50% from the field. Now he's shooting 40% from three. Rebounding is down. Offensive rebounds have just completely cratered. That was a huge part of his game, and now he's on the perimeter more, of course, which is helping in no more back cuts and being there for an offensive rebound because he's out there shooting threes. And I think defensively he is he incrementally improves every year, but just not enough.
I think he's like holding up decently.
When the whole team is there, he's there with them.
Yeah.
He's helping a little bit, but he's not helping a ton,
yeah,
but just enough at the same time. But when the whole team isn't there, he just stands out so noticeably.
Yeah.
So if he's on this rotation and Oubre, Bridges, Jackson are all certified very good defenders in the league, and DeAndre Ayton is solid, then I think he'll be more than fine in a team like that, but we'll see. But his 3-point shooting, man, I mean, kind of him and like Devin Booker casually putting up 24 and 6 right now, it just kind of goes under the radar has been my term of the podcast, but we're not talking about it enough. No one nationally is really talking about it. That a guy went from 22.2% and turning down open threes all the time last year to suddenly being a marksman. That's what he is.
I was told that he also has some things in his contract that are related to taking and making threes. So that might be a motivating factor. But hey, when you have a guy who said he worked on a shot over the summer at Media Day and he wasn't kidding, always good.
Well, everyone always says that, and you're just like, of course you did, because you're not a good shooter. You should work on that. And then it turns out, like, oh, he really worked on it. It's impressive. It's seriously impressive.
Anything else? What's coming up? I don't know. I can't even plan my tomorrow.
It's been a long week here of coaching stuff that should be wrapping up so Kevin can get some sleep for once. Denver on Saturday. Jokic back. Number one team in the West. Uh-oh. And then they go on the road. Indiana, Toronto, Charlotte, Minnesota. And back home against Minnesota and Portland.
It's
a lot of decent teams. About what?
That schedule. Making me nervous here.
Yeah, the West. It's a little rough. And then if you think it's going to clean up after that Portland game, Denver, Los Angeles, the Lakers. Not that it matters. Both of them are good. San Antonio, Atlanta. Yay, we get a night off. Houston, Utah, Golden State.
All right.
Keeps on going in the West, folks. We will be back next week to talk more Suns basketball. Make sure you follow us on the Twitter. That is at Empire of the Suns. You can find the link in our bio to subscribe on iTunes and wherever you listen to your podcast. You should be able to find us there and subscribe there as well. We will talk to you guys next time. Thanks for listening.